This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. The Great Firewall of China, the digital fortress aimed at keeping out the marauding forces of uncensored news, information, entertainment, and literature, is being reinforced. Already heavily censored, the country's three largest news organizations got a visit last month from President Xi Jinping, just to remind them, you know, where their loyalties must lie.
They are there to serve the interests of the Communist Party.
The media should be first and foremost a Communist Party mouthpiece.
He told executives that the media must protect the party's authority.
It's their party, and they'll decry if they want to. Decry Western influence, decry anti-revolutionary sentiment, decry criticism. Meanwhile, new laws have been put into place prohibiting foreign publishers from loading any content onto Chinese servers without government approval. Lockman Soy is assistant professor of journalism at the Chinese University of Hong Kong and former head of free expression for Google's Asia and Pacific regions. Lockman, welcome to On the Media.
Thanks for having me here, Bob.
Let's start with the March 10th development, the law that blocks foreign companies from publishing any content online of, quote, informational or thoughtful nature without prior approval from the government. That could cover just about anything.
That is sort of the point. And it's not that it's ever been specific in the law. They already have really broad categories for the kind of content that is not permitted. When Google decided to move its search engine outside of China, it was at that point Google versus China. That was in 2010, and since then, you know, Facebook is not there, Twitter is not there, YouTube is not there, Dropbox is not there. You know, it's no longer Google versus China. It's now pretty much the internet versus China, right? It's not like, you know, this law suddenly changes what's going on in China. It's really just codifying what's already going on. The big idea that Xi has been pushing is this idea called internet sovereignty. It's a fancy word for being able to justify that, hey, I have the right to control the internet inside my country.
The new laws affect foreign media outlets, but the most glaring impact is on domestic media, now explicitly expected to promote the government and the party. I want to play some tape from a video that was published at the order of President Xi to put a positive spin on his latest five-year plan. And here's a bonus. It's in English.
Hey, have you guys heard what's going on in China?
President Xi Jinping's new style?
Yes, and there's more.
The Shisan Wu.
The what?
China's 13th five-year plan. Yeah, the Shisan Wu.
Oh.
Every 5 years in China, man, they make a new development plan. Time has come for number 13. The Shisan Wu, that's what it means. As the plan goes down from high to low, the government's experience continues to grow. They have to work hard and deliberate, because a billion lives are all at stake.
Like every job.
When the public sees this kind of cheesy propaganda, do they roll their eyes?
People might have opinions about it, but they won't air it. And then, so it's the classic sort of spiral of silence theory from Neumann, explaining how the Second World War could happen in Germany back then. If you have an opinion, but you think the majority doesn't share that opinion, you won't voice it, right? Hence the spiral of silence. Sometimes you see when the crackdown is intensifying, you've seen a couple of people within the government speaking up saying, hey, this might not be a good thing. You know, shouldn't the media also serve the public? That's huge. You do see sort of these moments where someone says, hey, you know, the emperor doesn't have any clothes on.
Speaking of the emperor, since the death of Mao Zedong, there have been, I don't know, half a dozen leaders of China. None of them, with the possible exception of Zhou Enlai, had a cult of personality built around him. But it looks almost as though Xi is trying to cultivate that very thing. Is that my imagination?
No, it's not your imagination. I think it's absolutely true. You can just look at the difference in media content and campaigns. There was this joke on Twitter. They looked at the front page of the People's Daily. 11 of the articles on the front page were all about Xi, under Hu Jintao and even under Jiang Zemin. The term was, you know, they were the first among equals. That's no longer the case under Xi. Xi is just the first.
There's one other little wrinkle to this crackdown I want to ask you about.
Sure.
A Hong Kong bookstore owner just kind of vanished, apparently to the mainland, where it was presumed that he was being held by authorities for some slight, real or imagined, against the party.
there are five of them actually at this point, not just one, that are all, if you ask me, being kidnapped to China. They are based in Hong Kong. We have high levels of autonomy according to the basic law. You know, we allow for free expression here. The books they publish are flies in the ointment kind of stuff, meaning unauthorized biographies of political leaders, or undocumented love lives of political leaders, you know, and all that stuff. And so what happened is that, you know, like at some point it disappeared. The wife reports this, says, hey, you know, it's gone. I don't know where he went. This one particular person, Li Bo, was in Hong Kong. There was another person who was in Thailand in his nice fancy resort in Pattaya, I believe. Also, for some mysterious reasons, ended up in China. And so this is not just about Chinese soil and, you know, Chinese territory, right? You know, they're going outside the borders to grab people at this point.
And if you're the Hong Kong political elite, it's all about choosing your battles with the mainland government and party, right? So is this where they draw the line in the sand and defend this guy's rights?
Now, the interesting thing is that they got the people to confess on television. He was forced to be on TV and then said, like, hey, you know, I went back to China to confess a crime I did 13 years ago. I hit someone with my car. And now 13 years later, you know, while I was lounging in my pool in Thailand, I suddenly got a wave of guilt, you know, and I felt compelled to go back and confess my crime. The utility to this public confession is to keep up this charade, you know, that, hey, you know, we are still complying with law. We haven't done nothing wrong because, hey, you know, he's here by himself. We didn't grab him, right? And hey, you know, the fact that he, you know, has certain rights, you know, he's giving them up voluntarily. Look, you know, he said so himself on television. If you're the Hong Kong authorities, you're put in a very difficult spot, right? You know, what are you going to do?
It has a kind of cultural revolution tinge to it. The forced confessions, the parading of the political criminals for public consumption. China's not heading in that direction, is it?
It's hard to say. I mean, we're getting closer to it for sure, right? And these are the things that happened 50 years ago, exactly.
Let me ask you about your personal stake in all this. I mean, apart from teaching journalism and watching with some dismay as freedoms are rolled back, you have a particular interest in a robust internet culture and the freedom that goes with it. Why?
I grew up in Amsterdam, in Holland, as a son of two parents from Hong Kong. But I always had close ties to my family here and the culture here. I think I was in first year of college. It's, you know, I saw this movie by a Hong Kong film director, Wong Kar-wai, called Chungking Express.
On the streets of Hong Kong, a mysterious woman, a young cop, and an innocent dreamer are about to meet, where mystery and romance collide.
I came out of that film theater thinking, holy crap, you know, this is an amazing movie. I ended up making an unofficial website for the film director, and that way found out that actually a lot of people cared about this movie and, you know, wanted to talk about it. And this is why I feel so strongly about free expression. You know, when we talk about free expression, it's either about finding out about truth with a capital T, right? Or it's important for self-governance. But the third argument for free expression is that it's really important for autonomy. And that's something that resonates with me very deeply. Autonomy being sort of understood as becoming who you are, who you want to be, right? It includes figuring out who you are.
Lachman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Lachman Tsui teaches journalism at the Chinese University of Hong Kong.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.